Hey, everybody. Thanks for checking out this week's podcast. Before we get to my guest, got some new videos up on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Go check it out. Subscribe. It's good for you. It'll make you feel good. And it's Thanksgiving coming up. Don't go home for Thanksgiving and see family. Just stay safe. Don't make people sick with the COVID. Don't get COVID. You don't want to get it. I got it. I'm still dealing with stuff from it. I'm really tired all the time. I had a frog crawl out of my ass last week. You don't want it, okay? And it's so funny because people talk about Thanksgiving this year. Everybody's like, oh, I got to go home. I got to see the family. Really? Every single person I know, usually when you mention Thanksgiving to them, they go, oh, God, I got to go see my family. My brother-in-law's a jerk. My husband's a family. I can't stand them. Like, suddenly everybody has to see their family. And every other year, nobody wants to be anywhere near around their family. And also, what do you have to do? What? Because you got to eat turkey and then watch a football game. Okay. And we all know why the football game's on, because we're trying to avoid interacting with each other. Otherwise, there's going to be a fight. Stay home. Don't get COVID. Okay. Enjoy your turkey. Enjoy this conversation with Coleman Domingo. Plays Victor Strand on Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Awesome dude. Really fun conversation. And, really good insight into how he approaches acting and the role that he's playing on Fear the Walking Dead. All right. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is Coleman Domingo, great, great actor, director, writer, star of Fear the Walking Dead. It shares on AMC, as we all know. We're in season 6 now. Also, we'll be starring in Euphoria's special episode on HBO and Netflix, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Very, very busy man. Great to have you on the show, man.
Oh, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. Good to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's jump in and talk about Fear of the Walking Dead. I mean, you've directed an episode, at least one episode in this season, and it's an interesting point in the arc of the story where there's sort of this life behind Virginia's walls and sort of testing each character. And you know, your character is so rich in terms of its background, his background, and then sort of where he's come in the arc of the show. How is your character this season being tested, you know, vis-a-vis the others and what's happened in the past with your character?
You know, what I've always enjoyed about playing Victor Strand on this show for 6 seasons now is how he's constantly evolving. It's a character, when you first met him, that he was very much a symbol of Western civilization that had to be deconstructed. You have to take away all of his flash, all of that stuff that's just built on money and power and access, and really get to the basics of who he is. And so I think that he's been stripped down for like 5 seasons. And then he's being challenged. Once he gets into Virginia's compound in season 6, he's examining how can he have some agency within it. It's a system that he understands because it's kind of corporate, actually. So it harkens back to his origins of being a corporate influencer and be able to gain access. And so I think that he learns to be a bit more cutthroat, like as he's been in business before, which helped him thrive and helped him survive so long. So I think that he's examining all that stuff. It's not putting the pieces of Victor Strand back together again. We had to learn who he was and where his heart beats, but then also bringing some of that tricky, masterful, cunning trickery and con man energy into season 6. So I think that he's doing things like that. Like his last episode, he did something that pretty much shocked audiences, which is because they almost forgot. They were lulled into believing that Victor Strand had become something else. And then when push comes to shove, you know, he decided to shank some dude in the leg and push him towards the walkers because it was going to help his friend survive. And they were shocked because they didn't see it coming. They were like, oh, I forgot that that was an element of this character. And so it's part of my own ethos, believing that, you know, people don't change. They shift a little bit. But at the core, people are who they are.
Exactly. I think I want to be in business with you and not against you then, because, you know, you...
I think so, Paul.
Yeah. And our politicians show that they don't change either. So I think that that's par for the course. But, you know, that's an interesting tight wire act for you as the actor, the showrunners, the writing, you know, to come back and revisit sort of aspects of the less than savory character that of Victor, is that that's pretty ballsy. Was that a hard decision? Was that a hard decision by y'all?
No, I think that was the only decision, to be honest. I know that I have meetings with the showrunners in between every season, and they asked what was important to me and what I thought about the character. And I thought the character has sort of receded into a version of himself that was not true, to be very honest. Mm-hmm. And I thought we have to dial up Victor Strand's need and want in order for him to be compelling again. And I thought that it is, and I wanted them to trust as well that people do terrible things, but it doesn't mean that you won't like the character or people will feel, I want you to feel challenged about the character. And I think that's what I've always loved about Victor Strand, is that he does some unsavory things, but you're challenged because that's also very human. You're like, oh, I don't like that he did the Victor, don't do that. But you're rooting for him because you know he can do the right thing too. You know, you know,
yeah,
I think it's more complex in that way. Instead of saying someone is a do-gooder and they want to do good, that's actually not, I don't think that that's actually enjoyable television.
No, that's why I hated Mr. Rogers. I really hated that guy. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful day.
I've never heard ever in my entire life that someone hated Mr. Rogers. But to be very honest, I know, we're around the same age. I think I would actually turn Mr. Rogers off because I feel like he's kind of a punk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just changed into a sweater and changed his shoes. And
yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Right. And then and then when the show's over, he puts on a leather jacket and he's selling watches out of the trunk of his car in Pittsburgh.
That's your version of Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. I got you, Mr. Rogers, right here. Here's your Mr. Rogers.
I got him right here. Right here, man.
Well, you know, the nice thing about what you just said is that I think a lot of times, you know, our industry will sort of play down to the audience and not respect their level of intelligence, that they want to see complex characters, that they understand that things aren't black and white, you know, that, yeah, okay, sometimes you want TV or film or whatever it might be, digital, to take you to another place to relieve you of all the craziness that's going on in the world. But the reality is, you know, when I hear anybody say, let's take a politician, for example, you know, the flag in America and this and that, and I go to church every Sunday, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't trust the guy. I want a person that's real, that's got warts, and I think it's relatable. I think people themselves acknowledge that they're not perfect. That's why I never understand, like, politicians that never want to just go, yeah, you know what? I screwed up. Like, if you just say to me, yeah, I screwed up.
Exactly.
I think human beings are, we'll give people another chance. And I think that's what's interesting.
Yeah, man. Instead of trying to be so pious, I feel like you're so right. Because I think that you watch politicians, I'm always a fan of someone saying, I made a mistake or I don't know something.
Right.
It's like, that's when you know they're human and they're relatable. You're like, don't act like you've done everything right. Just say, I did this. I think we know what politicians were talking about. But one in particular is just like, you know, I think you've had more opportunities to be human and just say, I don't know, and I'm struggling and I'm trying. I feel like I would be like, I'm like, okay, I can respond. I can relate to that. But if you're just like shutting things down and you're taking no responsibility for your fuck ups, I'm like you're saying in television, that's what makes a compelling television. I mean, who didn't like Tony Soprano?
Right.
Tony Soprano's doing awful, terrible things.
Right.
But he's human and you're on the ride with him. You know, any character from Breaking Bad or Don and then Mad Men, you're like, he's doing some awful shit.
But it's
very human, and that's what we're drawn to, because we're like, whatever human is, human does. You know?
I think it's great that they're getting input from you as the seasons go on, and that you started with a character that was so rich that you could tap into different veins and not run out of places to go with the character. How do you, as a director now, I mean, obviously being an actor, that helps you be, a very good director, because you can relate to the actors. But when you started directing, what did you suddenly find on your plate as a director that you went, whoa, this is more complicated or harder than I thought, or, you know, there's more here to think about than I thought? What was the learning curve for you like there?
Well, okay, there's two parts to this question, I think. So I think first I'll center it by saying, I think that as an actor, who's been on a show for a long time, especially a show like ours, you have to sort of hold the writing team accountable, because you're holding on to the history of a character and a history of what the thing, the mechanism is. And so that feels like a tremendous responsibility. You're not just an actor. You're like, oh no, I'm part of creating and shaping this thing. And so they have to respond and listen to you as well. And then when you get on the directing side of it, there is that responsibility where you're like, okay, this is the way the show's mapped out. And our show is very much short films, it's short epic films, because we have stunts, special effects, visual effects, and compelling storytelling, and guest stars, walkers, you name it. And every director comes on our show and gets a little overwhelmed, to be honest. And I knew that I was up for the task because I knew what it demanded, and it demands it demands all of you. Because at the core, you just want to tell actually a very simple story. People just struggling to try to find. I personally think the thing that I bring to every episode that I direct is I always try to remind people why they are in this struggle, which is also maybe part of my own ethos as an artist, is like, why are we doing what we're doing? Because we want to have love. We want to have life. We want to have joy. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to put those moments into any script. So when I see it and it's laid out before me, I'm like, oh, we can dial this up. Why are they doing that? Or have a moment where a character smiles or feel something so human, even if it wasn't on the page. I'm like, but that's the whole point of it. Oh, why else do it? People are not just struggling to struggle. I mean, right. I think we're examining that right now. We're like, no, we're doing this because we want to be better. We want to have joy. We want to hug each other. So we got to get better, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's especially now. And, you bring up an interesting point. How much of, maybe not consciously, but maybe even subconsciously, does the show try to speak to some issues in society that can somehow be sort of brought into the show and be commented on, maybe, not over the head, but.
Oh, but we hit it straight on at times. Mm-hmm. I think, I know that season 3 in particular, we were dealing with, we shot on the border between Mexico and the United States. And we were very much making it a border story. And we dealt with race, and we dealt with having agency and trust and mistrust and the Native Americans and, Americans living on south of the border. We were dealing with it full out. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there were Spanish speaking episodes, you name it. We were pushing the envelope and helping our audiences actually see things a different way. What side are they on, and who's the villain, who's not? Because one minute, I think the beautiful examination of our show is that you may be on the side of our heroes, but I think if you actually, you swung the camera around and you look at their point of view, which is a lot of times what we do, sometimes our heroes can be the villains. Sometimes the thing that you invested in, you're like, oh, I'm all for that character. You're like, I'm on the wrong side of history.
Then
you're like, oh fuck, I'm not doing things the right way. So I think it's always an examination. I think the past couple seasons our characters were trying to be do-gooders and leave boxes of food on the side of the road. And I'll be very honest with you, I had some frustrations with those seasons because I thought, man, that's not who we really are. No, we're a bit more cutthroat in that way. And then the moment the pandemic happened, and I'm making sure I'm checking in on neighbors and doing food runs and things like that, I'm like, oh no, this is actually who we become. You find out who we become in these high stakes circumstances. And you're like, oh, we try to be our best selves. And even with a show like Fear the Walking Dead, we're all trying to fight a common enemy, like we're all trying to fight one right now. And the trickiest part is not that common enemy. It's human beings.
Right.
It's not the walkers, it's not the zombies, it's not the virus, it's actually human beings. How we can't get on the same page, what our own stakes are, what we want, what we're afraid of. And then it becomes about all these other things. And it's actually not even about the virus.
Right.
It's all that deep-seated stuff underneath us about race and parity and human, fighting for our survival,
Yeah, I mean, I always say that the things that are happening are really the most important thing that they do, and the reason they exist is because it's to give us messages about how we treat each other and how we should treat each other. And they're all tests in a way, in terms of if you want to be on the right or the wrong side of history, as you say. And you talk about sort of in season 6 you're living behind the wall, and it's sort of like it's it's also people being found to live in a situation that's been forced upon them, and sort of you take stock of each character in terms of how they deal with that. Is that one of the things that we're trying to do in season six?
That's exactly it. Because suddenly we're back into a formal structure. Right. And it's a structure that is imposed. It's like us now. You know, you're born into a system. Like, you didn't create the system. The system's there. And then you have to figure out how to work within it, manipulate it, find agency in it. And there's been things that have been imposed on what you can do or what you can't do. I mean, that sounds very much like, listen, I'm a black man in America, and I understand this. There's certain things, systems set up for you to win or not win. Right. And you've got to work within it. So that's that framework right there. I think she's got to, I mean, everything about Virginia's compound is a symbol of America. You know, it's you know, yeah. Her name is Virginia, and she's very much a trope of the old West, which is a very American form. And, you know, and it's something that we all find agency in, of like, there's good and there's bad. And it's Western at its core. So it's like an apocalyptic Western, but now it has a structure of America. And then it's like, okay, how are we going to work within this system?
Yeah.
We have and gain agency.
Yeah. You mentioned sort of five and the altruism in season five, and there was some critique of that exists out there. Do you feel six? We've both worked in this business long enough to know that you can't create your art based on what other people say or what they want or what they're not happy with. You gotta look internally, obviously, and have your own, right, the right motivations. But did you find it all as a group that you were maybe either even subconsciously in six trying to address five a little bit?
I wonder if it was all a setup in a way. I feel like, yeah, that altruistic spirit, it feels like, I know as an actor, I was frustrated in season five. I was like, ugh, this is not making sense to me. But also, it's probably myself and the character following a general ethos of being kind and altruistic didn't feel like it was part of the world. It's what we're struggling to, I think, at our better selves, we're trying to be that. Yeah. But the world is set up differently. And I feel like that's what we're examining now. It's like the world is set up, certain things you have to take care of yourself because the world is not set up for certain others to
win. Yeah, I mean, you know, five, two might have been, again, this is deep psychological analysis, and I'm not qualified, but you know, things have been so dark and dire and negative in this country for the last few years that, you know, maybe you all just, and the showrunners in particular, just even subconsciously felt the need to sort of write something a little more uplifting, or a little, you know, that was a reflection of something that they needed in their lives, right? Like, and so
I'm looking at a better angle and how things could be.
Yeah. Right. And I'm curious about, I know you're teaching also. When you teach, what are some misconceptions? Is there a common misconception or two that you come across that you need to try to knock down for your students about the approach to the business, the industry in general, the art of acting, directing, writing, any of that?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I've been blessed to, like, this semester I'm teaching at Yale, and I know that I'm working with my students to help them find, to help them find, truly find their voice as artists, and also for them to have business knowledge. Mm-hmm. Because I think that people like you and I understand that in this industry, it's wonderful to have talent. It's great to have talent. Talent will get you so far, but you got to understand practices of business and being a great business person. And how do you amplify your voice? You can amplify your voice in many different ways. And I'm trying to give people the skill set to actually have strength to say, this is actually the way I'm going to amplify my voice and tell my story in the world. Because, you know, people just, you know, a lot of times, you know, young actors, they just want to work. I'm like, yeah, but what do you want to work on? Be specific. Figure out what do you really want to do in this world? And a lot of times, to be honest, I know that my actors, I always work with actors believing that maybe 10% of them will actually pursue a full career as an actor. But I want to open up their mind and hearts to the whole industry to say, hey, maybe you studied acting to become a great, you know, lighting designer or something. You know, maybe it will transform you in some way. So just know that, be open to it. I think that's why I do, and you, we do so many different things, because I feel like I have an interest in different things. So I'm always trying to blow my students' mind and say, have an interest in science and politics and art and history and travel. That will fulfill you. And it's not just about acting, and it's not about, it's about being and being in service in the world. So I'm always trying to just like, you know, smash that thought that they came in because they wanted to be the next Meryl Streep or the next Gary Oldman. Yeah. And there's more too. Because they are very, we're naming people who are very complex in terms of what they're interested in and what they aspire to do in the world. You know, and a lot of it has nothing to do with acting. It's just acting is taking a seat in a great way in their careers and giving them the platform to do this stuff. But there's so much more. So I always want them to do so much more.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything informs everything else. You know, I think that, you know, your acting makes you a better director, writer. Your writing makes you a better director. You're in musicals. I mean, you know, I've always wondered about, you know, all of that, all of those experiences inform everything else, and I think make you better across the board, however you define better. And I think that sometimes people get locked into just sort of wanting to do one thing a certain way all the time. And I don't think that an artist can sort of really tap into something sort of substantive and layered unless they've kind of had a layered experience in life. You know, I think it's hard to bring anything to the character that's of real, of gravitas, you know?
Yes, man. Which I'm always engaging my students. The first thing I say, you know, when a student says, oh, you know, I've done this, I've been acting since I was 8 and I did this and this program and now I'm in university. And then what's next? I said, well, now you have to fall out of love. You've got to go live somewhere. You got to struggle. You got to have an interest in other things. You got to live, man. You got to figure out where you're going to live and do things. Yeah. And do things that have nothing to do with acting, because that stuff will be at the bottom and in your belly and for a character and in your interest. You know, find out what you're interested in and don't tell me it's about acting.
Because you're going to be one boring individual.
Absolutely. We want to see such fullness, you know, in a character's life and weight, and they can understand that. Yeah.
Do you find that, there's a lot more life left in your character on The Walking Dead? I mean, because like I said earlier on, like it's your work, you're starting from such a base of a great character, you know, who's at times wants to redeem himself. At times is, you know, just when I was out, they drew, pull me back in, you know, a little bit of that whole, like, you know, how do you see that this character can live for quite a while longer?
I wonder. I don't know. I wonder. I feel like it all depends. I think what I'm interested in for him for season 6 is to look on his darker side, but how it's useful for the greater good. Mm-hmm. I think that he's someone who is trying to be altruistic, but I think it has to come out of a place of like he's willing to do in with the world and the systems that are in place. He's got to do some dark things. Mm-hmm. I think that he's, you know, the people who stormed the Bastille, people who did it, you know, I feel like he's like, oh, I've got to go cut some heads off because that's going to be further humanity. I've got to go cut the head off of the snake.
Right.
No one's willing to do it, but yeah.
He's definitely the guy that feels like he's willing to do the dirty work that has to be done sometimes for a greater good. That's definitely, you know, and that to me is what's so compelling about the character and watching the character. Do you find, I just wanted to, I'm always curious about this. I think musical acting to me is on a level that's so amazing because there's so much going on. What is it about musical acting? This is kind of a geeky question, but I'm kind of a process geek. Like, what is it about that we don't appreciate how hard that is? I mean, because there's so many skill sets and talents going on at one time,
And then, of course, serving the script. It go into that a little bit for me, if you don't mind.
You know what's wild? I was telling somebody the other day, someone, a director is going to direct one of my solo shows in DC. And we had a conversation about it because it is very much a solo musical. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, the challenge for any actor with that is that, yeah, they're speaking text while they're also listening to music and also responding to audience and being in the moment. I said, so they're working on so many different levels. It's not just text and camera and just working with another actor. They're actually listening and responding and transforming and moving it through in a very holistic way all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I think that personally, I come from a place that, like, which is why I'm always, my senses are always available and up. So it's hard for me actually sometimes when I'm filming, I'm very sensitive to sound. So the moment that, you know, I hear something over to the left that actually shouldn't be in the scene that I'm filming on camera, I have to do some work not to respond to it. Because as a musical, somebody who comes from musicals and come from stage work and Shakespeare, I respond to everything in the moment. And, you know, so I will look at that. If I'm doing outdoor theater and at the New York Shakespeare Festival and a bird flies by, I look at the bird. I take it in because it's a part of my everything. Right. And I listen to the music, and I'm listening to the band, and I hear the drum lick, and when it licks, I pop my finger or something. You know what I mean? So I think that it's being that available. Yeah. And I think that's also, I know that's in my work. It's in my work even on screen, because it's like I'm a very available actor. That's the thing that I know about myself, that I even when I, people ask how I do my work, it's like, yeah, I will research and study my lines, but I don't make any true decisions till I'm on that set and till I'm on set and hearing what my other actors are doing and I'm available. What's going on? So I do my work to be available and in the room so it can go 1,000 different places. You know?
Yeah, and that's what real life is like.
That's what I find. That's what we love.
Yeah, yeah. It's this sort of like, you know, you learn the script and then you throw it out. And it's true whether, you know, if I'm doing this conversation right now with you, it's like, yeah, I had some things I want to talk about. But, you know, if I'm thinking about, okay, I got to get to question 4 now, then you're going to say something brilliant, which you really haven't in this interview, but let's assume that you did. No, I'm just busting your balls. No, you know, you say something really great and I miss it because I'm focused on whatever it's. And again, going back to audiences aren't dumb, whether they're listening or watching, they can they get a sense if someone's on it and getting it right or not, right? Like if I'm missing it and not listening to you, if you're not right on stage, the audiences are very intuitive and emotionally smart, I find, as a performer. They get you in a minute.
Yeah.
Man, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's why I think I personally love podcasts rather than straight interviews, because sometimes the interviewer is just trying to get through their questions and they didn't see the opportunity when you laid something out to just like, let's see where this goes. And I think that's what I love as an actor. I'm like, yeah, let's see where it goes. I don't know. I can't do this by myself. And right. So it's funny because even with younger actors, I know that a lot of younger actors, they, you know, maybe it's part of the world that we live in, but a lot of times they're looking at themselves while they're acting. So they're like, oh, this is the way I want the performance to go. And you're like an old school actor like me. I'm like, oh, I didn't make that decision. I'm just in the room and going to find where it's available. And it will be what it is. I don't have any constructed ways on what I think it is. All I know is I've done my work. So, and I trust that it's available and it will happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true with a lot of artists, you know, I have a very wide range of interests. So I've had scientists on, authors, I've had former skinheads on, musicians, you know, Paul McCartney and, you know, Stephen Colbert and everybody in between. And it's like, there is this commonality, I think, of sort of talking to people who are really invested in what they do and they're passionate about what they do and they're able to sort of immerse themselves in, you know, their process and their work that allows them to be so great. Like they're not outside sort of, they're not judging themselves as they're doing their thing. That's been sort of a common thing that I found in talking with folks. But, so listen, we got to do this again. I don't want to keep you, man, but, we got to do this again. There's a lot more to talk about. And,
And I was so glad to have you on. Fear the Walking Dead is happening right now. Check it out. And let's talk about your other projects as well and get you back on to, you know, talk about HBO and Euphoria's and, you know, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. So you got so much going on, and it's so great to talk to you, and to you're a real artist, and I really appreciate your work so much. So it's great to have you on.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate you too. Let's do it again soon. Okay, brother.
All right, man. Coleman Domingo. Thank you, buddy.
All right, there you go. That's Coleman Domingo. Awesome dude. Really great having him on. I'm definitely having him back on. There's so much I want to talk to him about, more about acting. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Stay safe. Don't go home. Stay home. It's a pain. You don't want to see your family. Well, what good comes of that? And go check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Happy Thanksgiving, people.